Support for this podcast comes from Facebook. Running a business is challenging in 2020. That's why many small business owners are turning to Facebook tools. Owners like Stasha Harris, founder of the Brooklyn hair studio Magic Fingers. When she couldn't meet clients in person, she held braiding tutorials over Instagram Live for thousands of her followers. Stasha kept going, even when the rest of the world stopped. Connect to the customers you're looking for with Facebook tools. Visit facebook.com/smallbusiness.
Welcome to The John Roa Show, a production of iHeartRadio and Roa Media Works. This is Leading From Home, a special limited series where I'll be checking in with leaders and entrepreneurs from across the country on how they're dealing with the coronavirus pandemic. It's Wednesday, April 29th, 49 days since the pandemic began. Shaking hands has been put on hold because of the coronavirus, and it may never come back. It's not a crazy thought. Handshaking is one of the major ways that bacteria spreads. Even Dr. Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, a member of the White House Task Force on the Coronavirus, and the sole adult at the table, says we should never shake hands ever again. And he's not alone. Infectious disease doctors nationwide have talked about putting an end to handshaking. And this was before the coronavirus pandemic. When you extend your hand, you're effectively extending a bioweapon. Greg Poland at the Mayo Clinic calls it a quote-unquote outmoded custom in that it has no place in a culture that believes in germ theory. And it's not unprecedented. The Black Plague put a stop to French cheek kissing for centuries. Could handshaking now meet the same fate? And then if not handshaking, then what? My first choice would be the fist bump. The fist bump's a more hygienic alternative to the handshake, and can it be a bit awkward in a professional or business setting? Sure, I guess. But so is handshaking many times, and a lot of other things we do in business. Whatever we choose to replace the handshake, it's still going to be important that we find ways to greet one another. The handshake is currently a staple in business, and it even increases trust amongst two strangers. Human beings also feel mentally better many times after platonic touch, like a handshake or a good hug. Personally, I've always found handshaking kind of disgusting. And I think for any guy who's spent some time in a men's room and seen just how few guys wash their hands on a regular basis, you can totally see why an alternative wouldn't be a bad thing. Today on the podcast, we're talking to Dr. Vincent Passarelli, a clinical psychologist and my actual personal talk therapist here in New York City. I asked Vince to join today to talk about mental health, a theme that's been very constant on the podcast, but mostly from the perspective of those who have felt its effects under the pandemic. What I wanted to hear from Vince about is why we feel these effects and some ways we can begin to cope and heal as the world hopefully begins to come back to normal. How are you, man?
Yeah, you know, pretty good. Doing our thing, right? You know,
I guess it's like it's the weirdest question during these times. You know, like I guess we're all fine insofar as that we're surviving, and I think most of us are healthy. But it's just a freaking weird time to be alive right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's a challenge for all of us. I think it's knocked all of us out of our comfort zone, myself as well.
Yeah.
Not just personally, but, you know, also with the work that I do. And it's a really a challenging time.
Yeah. Well, the work you do is what I want to talk about, because we've obviously been hitting on the topics of mental health a lot on the podcast so far, and something that I care a lot about. And you are my actual therapist, which makes this even more fun to have this conversation. And what I wanted to do is hear a bit about kind of your perspective on all of this, because what we've heard so far is a lot of people who are finding ways to lead and manage and deal and get through this, and kind of how they're might be impacted from a mental health perspective. You know, we talked to, I think you listened to that episode, guy Kevin Smith, who, you know, had a pretty bad month of March with, you know, getting the virus and then ending up in the hospital, mostly through, you know, because of his mental challenges, not even the virus itself and all these other people. But we haven't heard a lot from people who can understand this deeper than what we're actually all feeling. And I think it's really important to understand perhaps why we're feeling like this and where our minds go during times like this. And most importantly, what we can potentially do to feel better. I think that every person is getting lost somewhere in their own consciousness through all of this. So to start, you know, even though I know you well, I would love for you to tell the folks listening a little bit about who you are and what you do.
So thank you. I'm a clinical, by the way, thanks actually, John, for doing this. I think you're putting out some really good information for people. So I'm a clinical psychologist. I've been practicing for close to 20 years. And I have over years, my sort of expertise has sort of gone the route of transitions, life transitions. And I think it's sort of born out of just working with a range of people, a range of ages, ethnicities, different diagnoses. And I sort of, you know, anecdotally came to the conclusion that we all really want the same thing in life. I think we all just want to, you know, hopefully be happy, get by, have a sense of predictability, and be fulfilled. And I realized that early on that whether someone is 16 or whether they're 60, they're all really just struggling with, again, like a lot of the same things, you know, to fit in and to have the answers. I've done a lot of research over the years. I'm actually initially, I'm a clinical psychologist, but also did a lot of research in a lot of different areas, everything from anxiety disorders, depression, personality development disorders. I have an extensive training working with trauma, so you can say a lot of these things really map right on to the pandemic and the COVID-19 right now.
Yeah, I want to start with a question that I had a conversation about, and neither party could answer it. And this is something I feel you could give an incredible perspective to, which is, first of all, the beginning of the question is, what is anxiety? I know the definition insofar as that it's, you know, it's a sense of fear, usually of the unknown, et cetera. But what is it in terms of why it happens to us? And then to lead on to that, during times like this, when things are not okay and things are stressful and challenging, and if anything, we need our facilities, we need to be strong during times like this. Why are these the times that our minds turn against us? And why does anxiety kick in at a time when we need our faculties most? Especially from like a survival or biological standpoint, like why would this be the time that we all start to fall apart?
Yeah, great. I think it's great to be able to talk about that. You know, anxiety gets such a bad rap. I always say this. I think it's because, you know, since we're younger, we're basically taught that we should avoid anxiety, and that rather than confronting it, we should do our best to not take on challenges or situations, as well as a lot of times the internalization of the message that goes with anxiety is that something will go wrong, something is about to go wrong, or something is even wrong with you. And I feel, so I actually discuss this with so many of my clients. At some point, it always seems to come up. You know, anxiety, as you were saying, you know, it's related to stress. It is a healthy emotion. It is a normal reaction to stress. But unfortunately, going back to what I was saying, because it's associated with such discomfort, it's not looked upon as something that has value when it really does. You know, I know that, you know, as an entrepreneur, you know, I know that you know, in the past and in businesses, like you use anxiety as a signal that something is amiss here or something is about to happen, whether it is something I need to plan ahead for or even something positive. And I think that's why so many times in life when we experience, just say in your business, like, you know, exits from a company or just in people's lives, you know, childbirth or marriage, you know, we're anxious because it's something that we have just never experienced before. It's something, you know, anxiety goes with the message of, hey, this is really important right now, and I need to really pay attention. Now, on the other side, I also talk a lot about, and I think you and I may have talked about, like, you know, the optimal level of anxiety.
Right.
And this is the same for all emotions. We sort of need an optimal level of it, which keeps us in the game, which keeps us focused. And basically, you know, I mean, this is where the fight flight response is born out of, right? You know, going back to what you said about it being biologically driven, And it's a survival instinct. You know, anxiety is what keeps us from going down a dark alley to making a doctor appointment when we're not feeling well. It does go on overload. And this is sort of what we're seeing a lot now is where, or whether sort of like the spectrum of the emotion, like is moving more, just say to the far right, where the numbers are increasing in terms of intensity of what we're feeling. And, you know, we're, you know, we experience things like, you know, shortness of breath, racing heart, racing thoughts, a sense of urgency, particularly now that we're all inside and we're sort of like stuck inside. To say like anxiety is actually, you know, something that we need to listen to rather than ignore it. We actually need to listen to what it's telling us to do. It is the first emotion that we are born with. And I think we just cannot live life without it. And the goal is to coexist, which is where I come in helping people work on that through their life. With what were your prior experiences with anxiety? How did you cope with them before? What does it mean to you? How is it communicated to you? And then like bring that to the present.
Right.
When you said, you know, why are we sort of feeling like we're imploding or just feeling like, you know, people are saying like, I'm just waking up and I'm just not feeling myself, or it's just the same day over and over again. We are hardwired for adaptability, but I don't think our brain is actually hardwired for the opposite of COVID-19. You know, the coronavirus, you know, represents, here's the key where I think it's good to go beyond, you know, like anything else where that someone experienced, they asked me, you know, what does X represent to you? And in this case, X is the coronavirus, and it represents our darkest fears, right? It represents uncertainty, ambiguity, the unknown, a lack of control, right? And for all of us right there, you know, those are all the things that, you know, I think just really go to our core.
Right.
And our brain is hardwired, you know, to do what's easiest, not what is most effective. I think that's actually like sort of like what we're seeing is like, you know, what's happening right now, as well as, you know, there's so many layers of what the coronavirus is.
Yeah.
Now it's just affecting people's lives.
Well, it's super interesting that perspective, because I think you're right, is that anxiety has a negative connotation in our culture and society today, you know, because we associate it with negative times of our life, and we're anxious when we're running out of money, we're anxious when we might lose our job, we're anxious when, you know, our cat hasn't come home, you know, and so it is negative emotion. But I think that it's interesting that you're saying that there's a level of it that's quite healthy and keeps us potentially alive, or keeps us in check of our own selves. When we notice it is when it becomes to a negative level, which is probably what we're all feeling at the moment. And that's really interesting. And so when that level gets above a regulated level where it's in control and it's being helpful to us, to a level where it's being unhelpful to us, right? And when I think of anxiety, I think of, you know, I'm ready to go do a big presentation and all of a sudden I start shaking before I go on, I start sweating and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to screw this up. That isn't helping me go make a great presentation. Or when I'm laying in bed at night and I'm like, I need a good night's sleep because I have something important in the morning and I can't sleep because I'm anxious. And so it seems like after a certain level, it counteracts what is actually going to be best for us, which would be in those situations, walking out confident or getting a full night's sleep. And so when it crosses that chasm, when we're on the other side of healthy anxiety, what should we do? I know that's it's a simple question with a incredibly complex answer, but like, what are some basic things that people can do who may or may not be familiar and comfortable with these feelings, especially during a time like this?
You know, I usually start with some of even like what seems as being simple, but really are not, just coping skills. If you are experiencing right now a lot of anxiety, like physiological anxiety, or just it's palpable, I tell people, run your wrist over some over cold water. You know, it's a great runner's trick. It will slow down your heart rate. I tell people something that actually works a lot. You know, I get a lot of feedback from telling people. I tell them, take an ice cube. It's even better. You know, keep it over your wrist for a couple of minutes. The notion is not just the change in physiology, but also the change in temperature that our brain is now sensing. So it sort of pulls us out of a little bit of like what we're thinking, and then forces our brain to actually like be more focused on the temperature that we're perceiving. Breathing exercises, people I work with, I tell them Google things. You know, that's actually a good thing. I am not the end all in terms of being a resource for information. Look up what type of breathing exercises might work for you, whether it's relaxation breathing, diaphragmatic breathing. There's something called progressive muscle relaxation. These are things that I do that even myself at times find very, very helpful. It's a way of just sort of resetting our breath, resetting our brain. You know, some of the things I will also highly recommend it. Things that we know, but during times like this, all reason and rationale just flies out the window. And
that's such a great, point, because it seems like even the most reasonable people just go to the weirdest places during times of extreme stress. Yeah. And like, I think of myself as a somewhat reasonable person, even though I've dealt with my mind going all sorts of places throughout my life. But it seems like, 2 weeks into the quarantine, I'm forgetting what it was like going into a restaurant and imagining it never happening again. Like insane thoughts. I'm like, why does that happen to us?
Because we're losing our shit right now. I think, we're all sort of, feeling something.
Yeah.
We're all looking at our neighbors in a different way, right? I'm waiting for my neighbor to hit the elevator button. He's waiting for me to hit the elevator button. Like, who's going to hit it first? I'm not touching it, right? Our inner demons, are all coming out. Our quirks, our awkwardness. I don't really necessarily like using the word regress, but I think, this is what happens. In times of stress, we do regress. But not regress meaning, we regress and we never come back. We move back to prior behaviors, prior muscle memory. It's probably the best way to say it. Again, like our brain does what it knows, and it goes back to the language that it understands. And we just start to, repeat things that we've done before. Hmm. Now, specific to like what you had asked, why am I all of a sudden like forgetting what it's like, to shake hands with people and be in a restaurant? I think it's because, the more distance we have from normalcy, the more that we just sort of like slide back and become much more, I would say, isolated. I haven't really spoken to, I've been, doing FaceTime and talking to people, but, when I'm walking down the street, I'm actually crossing the street. When I see people and they're sort of doing the same, like, right. we're not connecting right now with the world. I mean, we're trying, which is one of the things I want people to do at this time. But I think it's sort of this disconnect that we have to do. Like, this goes back to the survival instinct. If I'm talking to someone and they tell me that they're not worried about the coronavirus, my radar actually goes up. I want people to be worried about it. Again, I don't want them to go overboard, but I want people to be hypervigilant to a certain degree. I want them to have attention to detail. I want them to reach out to people that they trust. Any sense of normalcy that we can, anything that builds structure and routine. And I think that goes back to, we lost our sense of routine. We lost our sense of normalcy. And in some ways, not in the sensational kind of way, a little bit of our sense of self. We're used to others, or an external being or an external force, implementing structure in our life. And now it's sort of up to us. And when we do this, our mind just, starts to get idle, starts to have a lot of thoughts. And then we start to, go to those places, emotions come in, and we're trying to balance what seems reasonable, what doesn't. This emotion, if I'm feeling something, this is sort of like a mental trap. If I'm feeling it, it must be true.
Right.
Which is actually, we would say is a cognitive distortion. And that happens like in all areas of life, no matter how functioning we are. It's just, at some point it's like, if I'm feeling this time after time, hour after hour, there has to be truth to it. When, and I think that at some point it just, it beats us down. I've noticed this actually. There's a lot of similarities. I've worked with people also with a lot of burnout over the years, and there's a lot of similarity to what people are experiencing now with burnout. Yeah. Right? A sense of physical exhaustion, emotional exhaustion, feeling very cynical, not knowing when the end is. There's no expiration date on the coronavirus. Feeling disconnected, a little bit even dissociated right now. So I think there are so many factors that are at play and that are happening, that it's just sort of it's throwing us off, as well as like, where do we get our information from? It's either information overload, which we just can't turn away, which sort of, affects our brain in a way that it's not firing the way that it normally does, to the idea of inconsistent information,
right,
that we're also hearing, whether, and this is not to put blame on anyone, but this is like, we hear different information at the federal, state, city level from certain organizations, from certain parts of the world. Some parts are doing this, like there's no consistency or congruence. And those are the things that ground us.
Yeah. That's completely how it feels. And it does feel like a lack of stability. That's what I've been feeling, right? Like nothing feels stable. And the things that normally would give some level of comfort, which I think come down to relationships and routines, and those things are all out the window for the time being. One sense I've got from a lot of people I've spoken to is a sense of feeling bad about feeling bad, right? Is that people who maybe are unused to these kind of feelings are getting even more down because they're having them. Or they're saying like, I don't deserve to feel bad because other people are worse off. There's people who are sick. There's people who've lost their jobs. And I am fine by all, you know, measurable metrics. So I don't have the right to feel bad, yet I do, which makes them feel worse. And so these kind of traps I've been thinking and hearing a lot about. What would you say to somebody who's feeling those kind of emotions?
Allow yourself to feel it. Don't push it away. Absolutely, there are people that are better off than us, and there are absolutely people that are worse off than us. But don't invalidate yourself. You know, so much. There's so much research and so much that has been written about the concept of validation or invalidation. And usually, it can be from family members, it can be from friends. It could be from life experiences. But one thing I try to always bring it back to people is give yourself permission to validate yourself right now. There is a real profound sense of loss that people are experiencing, and we are allowed to grieve. You know, I think so many of us are just, you know, pride ourselves on being conscientious and pride ourselves on being driven and not wanting to be, you know, a complainer. But that is different. You know, if you are right now feeling down, acknowledge it. That is not, you're not complaining. You're not saying, woe is me. There's a very, very big difference there. So that's something that I want people to reframe, to see it as that. And also, I think so many people are just uncomfortable with asking for help or allowing themselves to feel like they need help. And they put up a barrier. They put up a wall, right? You know, on the one hand, you know, it could be a strength because it just, you know, it helps you persevere and helps you keep going. But in situations like this, it could actually really spiral people where they're just not used to a situation where they need help, they're not in charge, and they can't solve a problem. This is something right now that we just, there is no solution. Or the solution, what I tell people is the solution is right now is just be. You know, I know we're at the risk of sounding cliche with that. You know, it's just be right now. Allow yourself just to be, allow yourself to feel. This is what we need to do right now just to get to the other side. Mm-hmm. We'll worry about the other side when it happens, but this is what we need to do right now to successfully get to the other side, to healthily get to the other side, because then, you know, we want to position ourselves for 60 days from now, because 60 days from now will come. And hopefully it is 60 and it's not 90 or it's not 120. I mean, hopefully it's 30. We don't know, but that will occur. But just give yourself time right now.
You know, I had an interesting conversation with now two people who were in the real estate world. You know, one was one of the HGTV hosts, and she is a big renovation expert. Right. And then the other is with one of the biggest residential brokers in New York City. And so she was talking about the future of those things. In both conversations, we talked about there's going to be a lot of people who are sitting inside their houses who are not normally in their houses as much as they've been the last couple of months. And they're probably noticing every new crack on the ceiling and chip paint and squeaky cupboard. And there's probably going to be this wave, this revolution of people trying to renovate their homes or moving or whatever, because they're noticing all of these things. To use that as an analogy, we've now been probably living inside of our own minds more in the last 2 months than we probably have in years. And very similar to our physical homes, we're probably noticing all the chip paint and the crack ceilings inside of our own brains potentially. Yeah. And it's potentially a wake-up call to a lot of people that they maybe haven't done as much work as they want to. They haven't been mindful enough. They maybe have been putting away things that they probably should deal with, very much like Kevin on the podcast a couple weeks ago, who, you know, had a known issue that this brought to a ferocious light. As people come out of this and they might be inspired or motivated to work on themselves more mentally than they were before, what is some advice you can give on what people should do? Is talk therapy the first avenue for people? Are there other things? If they do want to go that route, how do they find the right person? Because I feel like a lot of people get discouraged by getting to that amazing point of, I think I need more help, and then going, I don't know what the hell to go do, and then giving up. So what would you say to that person that maybe wants to make a change in their life after this?
Yeah, I would say do it if you can. I know I'm simplifying that. I hope that this comes across. I hope you feel this when we talk, but I hope this comes across as well with everyone else that I work with. You know, your therapist is only one part of your therapy, of your life, right, of your recovery. Look to as many things as you can in your life. And by that, I also mean not just good activities, but good people. reach out to those people, keep those people close to you. One of the, you said before about looking at the cracks of paint that are on the walls. And I feel like, just to add another metaphor to that, I think that what's happening right now, which is what pandemics do, is they expose the cracks in our armor, right? It tells us, like, here's what you have not done. No fault of our own. Sometimes it's just like, well, here's what you just need to do better. I don't want to say, like, let's pull a silver lining out of this, but take note of those things. And these are things that you do want to work on later on. Obviously, I'm an advocate of therapy. I've been in therapy myself. And it was at different times in life, and I thought it was great. And in some ways, I think that's what led me to be a therapist. Try to find, if you can, a therapist. I'm a big proponent of the therapy match, which means, what is someone looking for in their therapist? What are they looking for? Are they looking for someone, in addition to, intelligence and competence, looking for someone who likes to laugh a little bit, drops their guard here and there? I'm much more conversational is my style. Most people, I think, prefer, which I think the people who find me realize that. But I think that there are some people who prefer more of like, okay, here's what we're going to talk about. We're going to set an agenda, and then that's what we're going to do. And I do that to some degree. Everyone's style works for what they do. So the main takeaway I would say is, if you're looking for someone, is make sure that it's a good match. Interview them. The same way that I'm interviewing someone the first, second, third time, and so forth. Interview your therapist. Interview the person that you're talking to initially, maybe on the phone and then in session. And if you're not feeling comfortable, walk. The same way that we would walk from any other relationship in our life, right? Why be in a relationship where you're just going to recreate it or leave? And this is something I've said to myself as well as colleagues, is when this question has come up, is it's okay. If your therapist cannot handle you leaving, then that's even more of a reason that you made the right decision.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. And the other way around, challenge them. It's okay. I expect to be challenged. In fact, I actually enjoy it, because it means that the person I'm working with is invested in what they're doing. So the joy is more of that, okay, they're in this, which is what I like, and which is what our goal. I would say, when you are feeling challenged and you are feeling, we'll go back to anxiety, try to be objective. Listen to what the person on the other end might be saying, whether it's a therapist, whether it's anyone else in your life. There might be some real, pearls of wisdom in there.
Yeah.
And then there's other like logistical things, location, where someone lives, would it be, telehealth, insurance,
right,
or
right.
Types of things. But I really want to encourage people. I'm glad to do this and to be here. And also, like, you're putting out a lot of information that people just don't know.
Yeah. It's tough. I have, been in and out of different environments with therapists throughout my life in talk therapy and many different places in the world now, because I've lived all over. And, one thing I've realized is how important it is for me, but to what you just said, how important it is finding the right person. And even like when I came to New York, I met with multiple people until I met you, and we've now had, it's been a handful of months with every week when we're not under quarantine of meeting in your office. And it's great, but it took some of that matchmaking and some of that figuring out who works best for me. And I feel like that's something people don't always get. I feel like there's potentially a sense that a therapist is a therapist, that you all kind of operate the same, you work the same, you've studied the same things. And so if somebody goes and they have a session or two and they're like, wow, that I'm not getting anywhere. I didn't learn anything. I didn't have any breakthroughs. The person just seems like they're just kind of writing and nodding to me. And they're like, well, I'm not going to pay for this, or, whatever their concern might be. And they give up. And it seems like that's very common. And so it sounds like what you're saying, which is something that I intuitively know, because it's been doing this a long time, but other people may not, which is, it's really important to understand what your kind of goals and needs are and the kind of dynamic that you want. And then to do the homework to figure out the kind of person that can give you that in those sessions, because they can be incredibly valuable.
I'm sure we did this, but in the first session, usually I sort of ask people, and this is something your therapist should say, or you should actually ask them, is, let's set some short-term and long-term goals. And short-term could be within the next week, and it doesn't have to be something monumental. It could just be, I want to do just one thing, or I want to do a little bit more of this week and a little bit less. The idea is when you're interviewing them is you want to hear their thought process. I usually will try to tell people when I'm working with them, here's why I asked you this question. It's not that I asked you this because I'm looking to blindside you, in 5 minutes or, in 5 months. It's because, here's my thinking. There's nothing magical about it. I want you to feel comfortable, but I also want your honest answer as well. but have absolutely goal setting. You want a, you know, a match in terms of, you know, do we agree on what you want to work towards, or rather, more importantly, actually, how you want to get there. So if someone says, I want X, you know, I will give them options, you know, which I'll say, like, we can go about it A, B, or C, a little bit of all of those. Tell me what works best for you. Mm-hmm. Tell me in the past when you've tried to work on that goal, what has gone well, but also what has gotten in the way. The ultimate goal of therapy is, it's not for people to stay with me forever. You know, I do have relationships with people after a while, and, you know, we keep in touch and, you know, very nice things, but it's for them to take what we're doing in the session and to then go out and then do that on their own. You know, so that they're in a situation where, you know, they're thinking the way that we did moment. That is the ultimate goal.
I think that's spot on. And Vince, the last question for you, because there's this interesting, I think it's called the clown complex in philosophy, right? Which is, you know, the person that's making people happy is always supposed to be happy, right? Like the comedian's always supposed to be, but we know that's never true. So my last question for you is, how are you holding up? Like, because I'm assuming people are you know, they're expecting you to be the one that's always, you know, got everything together, helping other people, but that can't be true. So, like, how are you holding up? How has the pandemic gone for you, and how are you coping?
Thank you. No, I'm coping well. I mean, it's tough. It's challenging. When I talk to people right now, we're working on stuff, and they ask, like, I tell them the truth. Like, yeah, I'm concerned. You know, I have family that I worry about. You know, they have pre-existing conditions. You know, I'm not willing to roll the dice and just say, you know, maybe I have this in the month of January and February, were asymptomatic or had a mild, moderate case. I don't want to put anyone else at risk. You know, so these things do go through my mind like anyone else. You know, I'm hoping it's made me better in terms of, you know, allowing me to be a little bit more vulnerable, or just being vulnerable in a different way with, you know, with the people I work with in the same way that I ask them. You know, schedule a time where you go out for a walk, you get some, you know, exercise. You don't have, you know, people, you know, you don't have to like start taking up something, you know, like a whole new regimen or a whole new kind of training program. But we need that. We need, you know, our circadian rhythm, you know, is regulated by sunlight, by exercise, mm-hmm. by blood flow. These are all the things that we absolutely need to do right now.
It's awesome.
As well as communication. Yeah, communication, I would say, too. You know, reach out to people.
Yep.
Stay in touch. You know, usually it takes me a couple of days to get back to people and call them, you know, because, like, there's just so much going on. And, you know, I'm finding that myself, like, you know, I'm just FaceTiming, like, you know, family and friends, which I never do.
It's
not my thing. So I just find, like, that's been really nice. So in terms of how I'm doing. So, yeah,
that's great. Well, such good information. I think it's gonna be helpful to a lot of people. It was for me, you know, cause these are questions that I've often thought about, like, why does this happen? And I'm not sure I've ever asked it even to someone like you during our sessions. I just feel like those more abstract questions I think are important to get out there. And so when people are looking for someone like you, you know, the one thing I've always found is it's kind of hard to find sometimes. You can ask friends who live in the city, or you can maybe Google, but, like, are there better ways to find who the best therapist in your area might be? And on top of that, how would people get in touch with you if they hear this and they're in New York and they say, hey, I want to go talk to Vince?
Most of the people I work with usually come from word of mouth or some referral source.
Mm-hmm.
Not always, but I find that especially, like, over time. So I tell people, like, if you feel comfortable with someone and they have a therapist that they, you know, they speak, you know, well of, and you've actually seen this person in your life, you know, start to, you know, talk differently, you know, get better, like, you know, in terms of insight. If you're okay with it, ask them, like, hey, would you mind? I would actually lead with that. You know, ask someone in your life, do you think your therapist would have a referral source, just so that person also doesn't feel that you are, you know, encroaching, in their life or on their boundaries. Yeah. So I usually say that's a good starting point. The other is, you know, do your homework, you know, look up to see who, you know, your therapist is, look to see information, you know, look at their bio, you know, obviously outpatient, you know, private practice. But mm-hmm. if it's hard to do, I also will tell people, if you're in an area that has, like, academic settings or, you know, hospitals, they tend to have people on faculty that they can, you know, that you can call, you know, depending on the state that you're in, they can refer you, you know, they can refer, you know, give you a referral source.
Yep.
Or someone who is, who's on staff. So, yeah.
Cool. And all right. And what is your website in case people want to look you up, Vince?
Oh, thanks. Dr. Vincent Passarelli, located in New York City in Soho, and on Lafayette Street. So I think if people just do a quick search on that, they'll probably find my website.
That's perfect. You're the man. Great. Thanks so much. That was really great conversation.
Yeah.
Do appreciate that. And we'll be sure to talk soon. Stay well.
All right, great.
See you, man. Bye. A big thanks to Dr. Vincent Passarelli for coming on the show today. That was just an awesome conversation and a really important one. Give me some context to the why we're feeling like we are through the pandemic and some ways for us to get through the rest of this experience. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe, leave a review, or share with a friend. 100% of the profits from this limited series will be donated to charities that are helping people through the coronavirus pandemic. If you're currently leading from home, or if you're an entrepreneur that wants to talk through something or get some advice, I want to hear from you. Head over to roa.com/podcast. That's roa.com/podcast for ways to connect with me. Or hit me on social media at John Roa. The John Roa Show is a production of iHeartRadio and Roa Media Works. For more podcasts from us, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite shows. A special thanks to my producers, Jordan Goss-Poré, here at the show, and Tyler Klang, over at iHeartRadio. We'll be back with you on Friday. In the meantime, stay safe out there.
What's up? I am Machine Gun Kelly, and look, I know Halloween is going to suck this year because there's no trick-or-treating and all that, but I've got a treat. There's a musical podcast that I made with my friends 24K Golden, Ian Dior, and Dana Dentata, and Satan. Well, Satan's not my friend, but Tommy Lee is, and Tommy Lee is playing Satan. But don't just take it from me. Tell him, Satan.
Thanks, dude. It feels great to be playing Satan on this podcast. Listen to Halloween in Hell on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or whatever you get your podcasts on.